Hey everybody, this is the Brothers Wisp number 56. It's going to be a short and sweet one. We're basically doing a Wispapalooza wrap up. I know that was actually, 2 weeks ago at this point? But we haven't talked about it yet, so it's as good as time as any. Tonight we have Miller, who was actually there working the Wisp booth. You have to say hello, Miller.
Hi.
Tork.
You said I was working the Wisp booth. I'm like, I'm not at the Wisp booth.
You were. You got to go back in time. 2 weeks.
Was.
There you go.
Right.
Justin is our resident booth babe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
He looks good in heels, I'll have to say. We've got Mike Hammett from Chicagoland. He was up there actually as an attendee this time around.
Kind of.
More
or less.
I still spent
half my time chasing vendors, but...
I don't know. You were in the sessions a lot. Yeah, so... and this is Greg Sowell, the guy talking right now. I'm Texas. Miller's Virginia. Mike, Chicago. Let's see. We did the Wispapalooza in Vegas. What was that? Early October? I'm losing.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Second week.
Thanks for the feedback, the slow motion feedback there, guys.
there's high latency, you know.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
If only we knew how to do networking things. So let's see. Let's distill it down. It was a week long. I think, Miller, you were there, Sunday to Friday?
Sunday to Friday, yep.
Okay. I flew in on Monday night. I got there. And I flew out Saturday morning, early Saturday morning. How about you, Mike? When were you there?
Yeah, I was there Sunday night. Then I flew out Friday, 8 a.m.
All right. So most of the time, I walked around doing interviews with vendors. Pretty much Tuesday, solid. Wednesday and Thursday, I was in the exhibit hall doing interviews with vendors. Some of those we've already put up. Some of them were more or less elevator pitches. We were there sort of helping out the Wispa guys by... catching some of that stuff. We uploaded all of it to Dropbox. We've made that available to them. So at some point, they're going to aggregate all of that into something or other. I don't know. Something else I really enjoyed about it was I got to do attendee interviews. And so some of it was green guys. I was one of those green guys that sort of did my own, as well as veterans that had been there and seen it all, been there and done that. So that was a lot of fun talking to those guys. I didn't get to talk to nearly as many people as I wanted to. I suppose Miller's probably more used to this than I am, but from working that booth. But you talk to a million people, but you never actually get to say anything, and you never get to talk to the people you want to, I guess, it seems like.
I talk a lot about billing software and that kind of thing when I'm at the show. But I don't get to talk Wisp stuff nearly as much as I'd like. But I got some in there.
That's cool. In between. As a new guy, I would say it's definitely a pretty cool experience. I only got to go to the sessions, right? So they have sessions all week long and these really interesting tracks of all these things you can go in and listen to and talk about. And I think some of them are kind of open form panel type things. I didn't get to manage any of that. The only one I got to go to was Fiber Friday, which was the one I was actually really interested in. I ended up catching Chuck Hogg's presentation on kind of getting started, some of the ways he does various things. I thought that was really interesting. He was talking about how he splits his fiber. You know, he splits it eight ways, and then he drops a hand hole near his customers, and then he splits each one of those eight more ways, right? So 64 customers off of a single strand when it heads back to the, was that the ONT? And, or was it the OLT? I always forget which one's which.
I think it's OLT.
All right, there you go. Yeah. So it's like basic things like that. Like how often do you split it? There's calculators that calculate your loss and things like that. But then something else that I was really interested in was the second session was boring.
Really?
Like boring underground. Doofus. As well as like laying pipe and all that good stuff. And then actually pulling the fiber and putting it in the ground is something I've never had any experience with, so that was really interesting. I had like a whole solid page of notes, really good stuff. But I also made a couple of contacts in there. Kyle from Millennium was one of the guys doing the presentation and actually got his contact info, and he's agreed to come on here and sort of give us the the rundown and let us smash him with questions, whatever we can do to try and stump him, which is really cool. Something even more interesting is he said that he did most of his work aerial, and I'm really interested in aerial because most of the places I'm going have poles. It's faster, less expensive. I would really be curious to get his take on some of that stuff too. And then I can't remember what the wrap up one was. I think it was OTDRing and fusion splicing. I was less interested in splicing. I've done some of that, but the OTDRing, I've never really messed with one. They had a really cute one that created all these blocks instead of, you know, giving like this EKG crazy looking squiggly meter. This actually spits out blocks that a different colored block represents like a bend or what they consider a break or a connector. So it was really easy to read. Of course, I probably wouldn't be able to afford a nice OTDR like that. I'll probably have to pick up one of the cheap Chinese ones or something like that that just gives you the graph. So I wish I had learned how to interpret that a little better, but I think that's something.
We've got access to Expo ones here. That's what we use.
Yeah. Aren't we special? But then, let's see. Mimosa Fest, that was on Monday night?
Monday night.
Yeah.
So they had the Cambium event, which was kind of like a bunch of gear, was in a room, and free alcohol. And then right after that,
They had food. They had really good food.
They did have solid food. I think I had fish. I can't really remember. But then we jumped on a bus and we went to Mimosa Fest, which was pretty cool, at some kind of Oktoberfest-ish restaurant. And I think their beers came in like 2-pint glasses or something. It was huge. It's pretty intense. Met some cool dudes going to that. JD, Ben, and Kevin, I think. They were pretty cool dudes. They were crazy, man. They were dogging JD the whole time. He was like the sales guy. So it was a lot of fun repartee there. The food was okay.
Those were the guys up from Washington State, wasn't it?
I think they were from Montana. But that was pretty cool. They had a big area they covered, and it was a very small, tight team. So it looked like a lot of fun, interesting guys to talk to. What was your impression of Mimosa Fest? I thought it was pretty interesting. If you had a shot, they'd whack you with a board or something.
Yeah.
Did you guys jump in on that one?
It was definitely like no agenda. Like they didn't have any announcements. They didn't like say anything. It was just like, come have beers on us, guys. That's what it was.
Yeah. So. And the Mimosa guys were wearing lederhosen. So yeah. They were easy to spot. And one random guy that I thought was an employee, and he was like, no, man, I just thought they were cool. So I went down the street and got some. Which is pretty bizarre.
Rob. Yeah. He had some sort of MDU solution that he was working on.
Yeah, I talked to him about it. It was I think it's a G.home fast something or other coaxial solution.
I thought he had an Ethernet and over Cat 3.
It's both. It was phone lines and coax. We were mostly interested in the coax, but so yeah. I gotta follow up with that dude.
I need to follow up with that dude as well. I got his email. I just haven't. I think I even emailed him back. I don't know, circle back because that sounded interesting. I don't know what his price point was, but it sounded like a solid sort of play for him to use. What else? That was Tuesday, and then into Wednesday. How were the sessions, Mike? You did some of those.
I actually mostly went to sessions that I had advocated for to make sure that they did what I wanted them to do. And for the most part, they were pretty good. I didn't get to nearly enough marketing ones that I wanted to. Like, I wanted to go to all of them, and I made it to, like, 2. I had to keep corralling vendors and people and whatnot.
Tell me about the sessions you did like.
Well, I think it's probably the most valuable to me, you know, the most you know, deepest ones I went into, you know, would have been the marketing ones, because, you know, the rest of the stuff I'm not too worried about. But I suck at marketing and sales, and so that's, you know, that's what I need to learn more of. And I feel as though I didn't get nearly enough out of it, but, you know, I only went to a couple of the sessions out of the bunch they had. I'd say that probably the ones that I felt the greatest, like, crowd feedback was like the one on DNS. You know, I've been pushing for that for a while because people seem to not understand DNS, despite it being, you know, fairly mundane. But, you know, they don't understand why you separate resolvers and authoritative. They don't understand why you want your resolver on your network. And, like, the room was packed. I mean, you know, there was, well, maybe 80%. And, you know, the crowd was asking questions. And afterwards, you know, people were asking questions. And, you know, even though I already knew the content, that was probably one of my favorite sessions. Well, awesome. Of course, I knew the content. I'm the one who told them to do it.
Right. But, I mean, even if you go to a session where you know the material fairly well, you always pick something up, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't remember what it was. I asked on our Slack if anybody was doing this. No one ever answered, so I'm assuming not. It was RPZ or something like that, DNS RPZ. Yeah, DNS RPZ. I asked and no one answered. Losers. But from what I gather, I haven't looked back up again, but from what I gather, you can feed it, like you can set some DNS resolving servers to, Team Cymru and Spam House and some other services. And they'll actually, if somebody's looking up a DNS for like a known botnet or something like that, it just, you know, nulls them. You know, it turns back, you know, 127.0.0.1 or something like that.
That's cool.
To help mitigate, you know, malware through DNS. And it's not like they're taking just websites you don't like. It's like, you know, not like, you know, this is the DNS address for this botnet. Kill it. And then on some of the reverses too, because I guess it sounds like they can, some places they can create reverse DNSs on IPs. So like they look up an IP, get a reverse DNS, and do a forward DNS lookup. It gives them a different IP that's the actual control server. Just, you know, layers of crap. And apparently you can put stuff in your DNS server to block that. So I need to look into that.
That's cool. That's very cool. All right. Any other sessions you thought were particularly interesting other than DNS? I know, weren't you on a panel for like your core routing and stuff?
Yeah. I was on two panels. One was for, you know, peering. Then one was, you know, choosing your core. And there was three of us that were about like the core of your regular network. And then there was one guy that was, you know, he was more LTE centric. But like, you know, I was afraid of like, you know, how is this guy going to play in? Because, you know, we're all talking about routers and switches and stuff, and he's talking about something completely else. But, you know, he did a really good job of, you know, integrating, you know, how, you know, the LTE core works in, you know, with the rest of the conversation for the whole hour. And of course, you know, there was John Brown. John Brown was one of the guys. And so I thought for a while there, I was like, you know, what am I going to add with someone like John Brown on the panel? It worked out pretty good.
You know, and from the people I did talk to and just kind of listening to conversations, because I'm an eavesdropper, a lot of people were really interested in the LTE stuff. I mean, there's still a lot of mystery surrounding that. So honestly, I want to get some of these LTE guys on here just to talk about their experiences, what they think one way or the other. I mean, like some of the biggest boosts were Bicells and who's the other LTE provider?
Telrad.
Telrad, yeah. That's right. it ran, I was going to say Tarango, and I knew that's not right, and it just ran out of my head. But Telluride, yeah. So those guys had a fairly decent bit of buzz going about them. And I think most people are just really curious about how it works in general. And, you know, it's supposed to be kind of magical, be able to cut through some trees and things like that. I think a portion of that, though, is what frequency you're running. Unless I'm insane, doesn't most of that LTE stuff do like, was it like 2.5 gigahertz or 3.65, stuff like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, most of the LTE that Wisp is going to be running is either in 2.5 or 3.65.
Right.
But most of it in 3.65.
But 3.65, it's almost impossible to get a license for now, right?
The FCC is not issuing licenses anymore, so you have to buy a license from a Wisp that doesn't want their license. They stopped selling licenses because they're migrating to the CBRS band, which will be managed entirely differently.
Isn't that going to be some kind of system where like an AP or a base station actually phones home and says like, these are my GPS coordinates and this is the frequency I'm in, and it's maintained by some big database or something?
Yeah, like there's going to be a bunch of database providers, Google and a bunch of others. They will, they're still hashing that out, because FCC basically said, just left a whole bunch of stuff for industry to figure out how they're going to do. And so, like, there's this group called the Wind Forum that's been hashing this out for a couple of years. But the gist of it is, you're supposed to be able to buy licenses. Some of this is subject to change because the FCC just issued something like 2 days ago proposing to change a bunch of stuff before it's even implemented. They're trying to change it again.
Nice.
Largely due to T-Mobile and other cell guys. But how the law stands currently is that you're supposed to be able to, once they have this auction, to buy licenses in 10 megahertz chunks by census tract. Normally a mobile, license covers like an entire metro area or half of a state, which is out of the scope of most WISPs. But doing some looking the other day, my coverage here will be broken up into like 100 and some odd census tracts. So they're really small and nimble as compared to what's normally out there. And the thought is that then, WISPs might be able to bid competitively on these small pieces. Can probably happen anywhere outside of like a major metro. In a major metro, it just depends upon, what you're going for. But
that sucks.
But now with the FCC proposing to change things, which I hope to have a video with Vispa next week to go over all that.
Because something that's interested me in the LTE space is, what if I could do kind of a micro pop inside of an MDU and then just use the the access points you just drop in one of the units? That way you don't have to actually do any cabling inside of apartments and things like that. And so if it's going to be impossible to gain those licenses in a major metro area, the technology's dead to me.
How much do you expect to do with a 10 megahertz license, though, inside of an MDU? I don't really see that providing a lot of bandwidth.
I don't know. How much do you need? 100 megs?
Everyone thinks they need more than that.
With current generation, the LTE gear that WISPs have out there, you're looking at about 100 megabit, I think, per 10 megahertz chunk, or maybe that's 20. Maybe that's 20 megahertz chunk. But but there's going to be unlicensed space as well in this band. So if you can't get a license, you can still use the band. You just don't have a license, which is fine.
Fair enough.
And they're talking about adding more spectrum to it, so they'll get, this is one of the hottest bands right now. That's why cell guys are, looking into it. But I mean, like, you know, for your area, you know, for your home, you know, I don't imagine those will be hotly contested census tracts. You know, Houston would be, but, you know, College Station wouldn't be.
Well, who knows? Who knows? Something else I saw while we're talking about hardware, something else I saw that I thought was pretty cool, and maybe you guys won't think it's cool, but they had some set-top boxes, you know, for IPTV delivery. I'm still trying to find an affordable solution for that. I haven't given up hope. Something I thought was really interesting is they had this one company out of Germany. I can't remember the name right off the top of my head, but
like
they had these set
42 or something like that.
Yeah, that sounds right. But they had these set-top boxes, and over in Germany, they've got digital television running in some different band than we have here. And what they did is they built in regular TV tuners into each one of the set-top boxes. So instead of having to have a head-end unit, you know, if you're doing IPTV and pulling in the local channels and then having to negotiate content rights. I mean, because you got to pay those local channels to pull that stuff in and then digitize it and send it. Instead of having to pay for any of that or putting that gear in, each set-top box basically pulls in that stuff over the air. So it seamlessly integrates into the middleware. So it looks like just another channel in their list, you know, as they're flipping through, which I thought was brilliant. They said that there's enough interest where they're investigating what it's going to take on the engineering side and all that stuff to do it for U.S. television. They didn't have a target date for that stuff to go live, but it's pretty attractive. I mean, it makes somebody who wants to do IPTV delivery anywhere, it makes it a really viable option, you know, because there's a lot of providers like the Server Plus guys and some other folks that are selling IPTV streams, but you got to source the local channels yourself. And so this means you can sling that connection anywhere without having to worry about local channels. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, you know, I didn't get a chance to looking at that, but that sounds interesting. I saw that they were with the CTI booth, and CTI also does mm-hmm. some stuff with the you know, Real Choice TV, yeah. which is what the Plus guys do.
I think Real Choice actually has the gear and the content rights negotiated. I think the CTI guys are just reselling it.
Yeah.
But they're fairly aggressive, I think, as far as pricing goes. So they're a viable option for sure. And they told me, contrary to the last time I talked to the Server Plus folks for Real Choice TV, I mean, they're the same thing. Last time I talked to them, they said there was no bulk MDU play. They couldn't do that. So it was really only there viable is. For WIS. But apparently now, yeah, there is. Whereas there wasn't
they
before,
last,
there is now.
They had it at the last show when they announced it.
Yeah, it's been a minute since I've talked to them.
Yeah.
Because I know we could never compete. Like, because I was stacking them up against, say, like a DirecTV or the incumbent for sure. And it wasn't even remotely close, but if they have a bulk.
Yeah, DirecTV was way cheaper bulk than Real Choice was. So.
How about now? Is that still the case?
I didn't get updated pricing, but last time we talked to him, I think it was still more expensive.
All right. So there you go. If you're trying to compete doing the IPTV in an MDU environment, right? We're talking about high-dense environment. It's just that it's hard to do. I know whenever you stacked it up against, say, I'm a WISP and I've actually got decent throughput and I can sling a set-top box out to somebody, you know, 5 miles away, you could actually be affordable enough to, say, undercut satellite TV. So, I mean, that it was an option. It was a play in there when I was talking to him, at least.
I just saw something recently that AT&T had a box that was going through the FCC that was over the top. A set-top box that was going to do some kind of streaming. So,
because DirecTV has direct, was it Direct Now or something?
AT&T and DirecTV are the same thing now. So
yeah, one and the same. I heard the Direct Now wasn't that good. At least at launch, they were ill prepared and just wasn't very well received. Maybe they've kind of corrected that. Maybe it was just they didn't have enough infrastructure in place. I don't know, man. I love speculating, but I'm not really sure.
I believe Akamai was the one that was doing their actual distribution. So Akamai should have had that capacity, but, you know, I did hear a bunch, you know, all the new ones that have come out lately, you know, PlayStation View and DirecTV Now and YouTube TV, you know, most of them had, you know, some issue, you know, some major issues or another. And, you know, some don't have DVRs and some of them don't have this. And
yeah, YouTube TV's out in Austin now, I think. So they've expanded. They're taking on new markets. I'm curious to see. I haven't talked to anybody that's used that. Wonder how that's going.
It, I know on the FMUG email list, there's a few guys there that actually have, I think, like all of the services. I think they have YouTube TV and DirecTV Now and PlayStation View and something else. Just Sling. Sling's another one.
That's right, Sling TV.
Yeah, Hulu. Say Hulu.
No one cares about Hulu.
All right.
A lot of the content has gone from Netflix to Hulu, though.
Do you guys see any other hardware you're particularly interested in?
Oh, yeah. I guess we should go back to actually talk about the show. That's kind of the point of this. I didn't get a chance to talk to him about it, but Bridgewave has a couple new radios out. They've got a 10 gig, you know, 80 gigahertz radio, just like everybody else does now. Not everybody else, but, you know, they're going to be pretty common up in the 60 and 80 gig areas. But then I also wanted to talk to him about, and didn't get to, about the, I guess they have an updated version of, like, their regular licensed band radios that, you know, 6, 11, 18 gigahertz, whatnot. And they sound like there's something, it's not just like another Me Too, like they've done something unique. But I haven't had a chance to talk to him about it.
Hmm.
So that could have been interesting, I suppose.
I blame you, Mike. It's all your fault. Let's see. How about any services or anything else that seemed interesting? It's all a blur for me. We waited too long. It's all just kind of falling out of my head. That was a long week. I didn't sleep much. And it was, I'd say it was a lot of fun, but man, it was... I was busted every day. I was exhausted trying to keep up that pace. How about some of the folks you met? I met a lot of cool people. I met this guy, Christian from Chile. He was pretty cool. He's a pretty cool dude. They have their own kind of small WISP association down there that they're starting up, which I thought was pretty neat. I met Richard from Barbados. I'd actually talked to him before. He's got a unique... interesting thing. He's somehow landed a monster contract with the government to deliver not only IPTV but internet services to like 20,000 subscribers. Then he's got to ramp up really soon, and so I've been working with him on a little bit of stuff. I think they're also looking to distribute Caribbean-based television over here to the States, which is pretty neat. I'm kind of working with him a little bit on that piece, which is really cool. I actually got to meet Scott, your guy Scott, for the first time. Hell of a nice guy. Those guys from Wyoming, Britton Turner, met him like in real life for the first time. Super nice guy. He's talking about maybe coming down here to catch an A&M game, believe it or not. So might run into that cat again soon. I don't know, man. There's just so many people, but I didn't meet nearly
as many. You met my sales guy, Adam.
Adam, dude. Adam was so kick-ass. He's so cool. He's like it's like a human Quaalude walking around. He's so chill about everything.
Yeah, he is. Well, he can get riled up, though, pretty easily.
He can get spicy?
Yeah, he can get spicy.
Yeah, dude. He was talking about you the entire time. He's worried about you, Miller. He's trying to make sure you're taken care of. I think that's pretty dope. I guess he didn't want me to steal you away. Maybe I dropped some hints. Now let's see. Who else do you guys meet?
Did you guys see that SD-WAN vendor?
That's the funniest thing. I think I got a voicemail that I won. Someone, my business card was dropped in some fishbowl, and I won. And it was like a 20% off of their product, but it was like below wholesale or something, 20% off of wholesale. And then I got an email right after the voicemail. I was like, who are these people? Like, did I actually win? Or
yeah, so
yet, I was like, this is a genius marketing strategy. Just get all the cards dropped in and then just send an email that you won, but you got to pay for the product. It's just at a discounted rate. And then, you know, call them and follow up. I think everyone won, but I don't know. Maybe yeah, I won.
Yeah, my
wasn't a drone, so I wasn't interested.
Scott from Indiana, he got one of those calls and emails.
He did. He got a he got a drone too, though. He got a really nice drone.
And like I was looking at it, it was like $130 a month for a box that will, you know, switch which upstream connection, you know, the client is using at the time. And, you know, like
it's good for like a hotel, but
I think the $130 a month was for one that would do like 50 megs. Like that's what you're paying for the box. You're paying $130 a month for the box on like a 3 or 5 year contract. Like if you want it, like if you want like a 1 year contract, it was like $700 a month. I'm like, what?
Yeah,
you guys are
pretty high. No, I mean, I can definitely see that for working in the data center world. I can definitely see a couple of customers that would be all about that. You know, I mean, it's just they need high availability and they need to be able to get as many cheap trash internet connections as they can. I can definitely see some of those guys going for that because, I mean, to be honest, MPLS and point to point, those are going the way of the dodo, right? If I can get more than one really crappy internet connection and just have some magic box take care of it for me, that's the route they're going to go.
Yeah, but like, I mean, you know, I'm sure they had some traction, but I mean, you know, going to a WISP show with a $700 a month box probably got a lot of people saying, oh, okay, moving on.
I don't know. I think there's probably at least half of the WISPs also do IT services, and they're going to have some business customers that maybe somewhere in there this fits in their portfolio, possibly. You'd be surprised.
I'd probably just script up MikroTik and, you know, check gateway and just call
it. Cross your fingers and hope it works good enough. Yeah.
I'm really seeing some other new hardware. What else did we see that was there?
The 2.5 gigahertz or 2.5 gigabit per second IgniteNet.
I think that's shipping. Well, you got some of those now, don't you?
Yeah, we got two of them. Chad and his newest employee, Mike, flew down, and Benton from Double Reyes drove up and helped us do an install for two buildings, which is pretty cool. I never had a vendor come out and carry cinder blocks up to a roof before, so.
I've done that for a vendor.
Yeah. So it's pretty cool. We got it up and running, and it's performing pretty good, actually. So no real big problems there.
Gotcha. You're going to let it burn in for a while and then save your judgment for later, I guess?
Yeah, we only have – it's a sector, and we only have one client on it right now. We're about to add another, but with that one radio, we're feeding two buildings because we use the copper for one building and then the fiber for another building.
Hmm.
Thanks to Mike, we have an SFP port. But it's only we ran fiber to the other building. Thanks to Mike. Thank you, Mike. It worked out well.
All of it was for something.
I had this idea that I was I didn't have a lot of time to lab it out, but because it's N-base T, a copper port, and it's not an SFP plus, but both of those actually work. You can put a copper SFP in the SFP port and then try to do some kind of link ag over both of the 1 gig connections to get up to that 2.5 gig across the air and then try to, you know, actually use some of that capacity until that MikroTik N-base T adapter comes out.
Yeah, so. That's the cheapest one I've seen is the one from MikroTik. I know IgniteNet's coming out with one. Cyber Story.
I don't think they're going to come out with that one anymore, because when Microtech announced that one for $65, they were like, just use that. So I don't think that one's going to come out. I actually have one, and it doesn't work in a Microtech, which is kind of a bummer, but it does work in IgniteNet. So we were going to maybe try to link up two radios using it or something along those lines. So what, I don't know yet. But.
What Microtech router or switch is supposed to support the in-base T stuff?
I think they have a chart on their website, I think.
Yeah, it's anything that has an SFP plus port on it will support it.
Okay. So. I didn't know if there were special power requirements or anything like that for that port.
No.
No?
Now, I have heard rumors that Nutanix is going to support in-base T. I haven't seen anything official, but I've heard. So that's going to be exciting if they do that. You do have to use them, right? You have to turn off the port before you unplug the radio.
Well, but yeah, but because they don't have overcurrent protection. So if you unplug it or plug it in with the power on, the port or switch dies. If your
surge
suppressor does its job and, you know, shunts probably not the right word, but, you know, moves the surge over to ground, you lose your port or your switch. Like the basic Ubiquiti PoE brick has this functionality in it, and the Nutanix switch does not.
Does Nutanix have this on the roadmap to repair?
To adjust? I don't know.
Not necessarily repair, it's just add the feature.
We have a few Nutanixes, and we haven't any problems with them. They work well. We don't have a single dead port or anything on any of them.
You just have to power the switch down before you unplug or plug in a radio?
No, that's just that port. Turn off the power on that port. Oh, you just
shut the port down?
Yeah, we've got like 6 air fibers on one Nutanix.
Gotcha. So long as a knucklehead tech doesn't go out there to reboot something and just unplug and plug in, you're fine.
Yeah.
All right.
But did you guys see the carbon fiber tower?
I did. It looked crazy.
There was a company there, and I actually didn't get their information.
What kind of grounding problems would you have with something like that?
I would expect you would just install whatever grounding that you would need.
Just drop a copper line from the top down to the bottom, maybe?
You install... Well, because you're actually not supposed to rely on the tower, you know, structure for your ground anyway.
Right.
Because you could have breaks or paint or whatever that, you know, interrupts the current. But, drop a number 2 or 4 copper down. But, like, they're saying, though, that they can, like... I mean, like... Like, I didn't hear the full pitch, but they made some outrageous claims before. And I didn't believe any of it until I realized they're building it out of carbon fiber. I was like, oh. Yeah.
I think they said cost-wise, it's never going to compete with a traditional steel tower. I think they were saying this is like special circumstance, like in the Arctic or right on the coast near a lot of salt water, something like that.
It's a tactical tower.
They were talking about some city was going to replace like their street light poles with them because of the way, the utility poles in a particular area, because the tower itself was light enough that if a car drove through, it would just drive through, and then the rest of the pole is suspended from the line.
How crazy.
Because it's so lightweight.
Yeah.
If a car hits a wooden pole, that, you know, those wires can't hold that wooden pole up, so it just falls down on the person or, whatnot in the area. Then, then you lose your power and fiber and all that other stuff. But apparently the carbon fiber one's so lightweight that they just break the bottom. And they can actually repair it, not just replace it.
They must have a lot of drones.
With autonomous cars driving themselves, pretty soon we won't have that problem with cars hitting poles.
I I don't see that happening for probably 20, 30 years.
The CEO of NVIDIA thinks we're going to see fully autonomous cars within 4 years.
I sure hope so. I want to own one.
That'd be nice. I'd like to like just zone out on the drive home.
Yeah, just chill, not even worry about it.
Yeah.
I mean, there are more cars out there now older than 4 years than there are cars younger than 4 years. So there's no way that's going to happen in 4 years. I mean, like, you may have some out there, but they're not going to be ubiquitous for 15, 20 years.
Speaking of cars and going down a tangent really fast, my wife just got a Jeep. And now she determined that, like, there's this Jeep culture because, like, people wave at you when you're in a Jeep. And, like, we parked in a parking lot kind of out. And then when we came back out, there were, like, three Jeeps parked around us. So I think she joined a gang, I'm pretty sure is what happened. It's weird. Jeep people are strange, dude.
Yeah.
And then, like, I looked at her keychain, and she's got this special little Jeep keychain now. And then she got this window protector thing that says, like, yeah, man, it's like, it's a whole thing that's starting to happen. It's weird.
So, you're how far from Waco?
I'm about an hour, about 100 miles, give or take. It's where I grew up.
Well, you know, one cult or another cult. And, you know.
Dude, I live at College Station, so I couldn't completely leave the cults. I had to kind of, you know, ease myself out, migrate over to here.
But
Aggies are a cult.
But, you know, now there's a Jeep cult that she's joined. She's going to drag you in with it.
There you go. Back in. Well, I honestly, Wispapalooza, I had a lot of fun. It was really stressful the first couple of few days. Met a lot of good people. It was really cool being able to just meet all of the vendors. I mean, I've gone to a lot of mums, but, you know, there's not a whole lot of variety as far as vendor goes. And here, it's everybody in one place, except for Microtik.
Yeah,
everybody
except Microtik.
But Microtik. I have no idea why they would come there. And to be honest with you, when you go to the mums, I mean, I have a good time at the mums. And don't get me wrong, but it's like 200 people, 250 people. And you come to this, and it's like 1,800 plus people this year. So it's the same sort of atmosphere, the same sort of environment, only so many more people. So I think it would be really cool if Microtik would just collapse the mom into Wispapalooza and just get a booth and do some stuff there. That would be really dope.
I could see them doing the mom with the spring show, Wisp America, since I know Microtik likes to move about. You know, they always go somewhere else.
Yeah, absolutely. And supposedly the
spring show. Like Alabama.
Well, the spring show is supposed to be more technical, right? It's like the quote-unquote technical show. That's what they were telling
about
me.
That. It's just a different crowd.
I think there are some more technical sessions, but, you know, there's still business and other stuff, too. But, yeah. But, I mean, you know, Microtik would fit in at the spring show.
It's a much smaller show, but.
Well, I mean, like, you know, but like the last spring show was still bigger than the first Vegas show.
Yeah.
I mean, so they're growing. It's just, you know, Vegas is.
How big would you say bigger. It was? Like attendance wise, maybe like 800 people?
I think it was over 1,000.
Oh, wow. That's really good turnout.
Yeah,
it's a good show.
Yeah, but
so much barbecue.
Memphis? Yeah, the barbecue's just alright. It's just okay.
I don't know, man.
You gotta get the fried chicken, brother. Memphis, you gotta go to Gus's.
I didn't get there, but I did go to that one place that had the ribs. Like,
three times. The one place. Because there's only one place with the ribs. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the one on the corner that I was always open playing the music. Yeah, always in the live band.
That's most places.
I don't even remember the name of the place, but the last night we were there, we got like the cowboy steak, and it was like just a gigantic plate of just steak. We just all sat around and ate it. It took forever. But it was good.
Before while we're talking about food at the at Wispapalooza, Baltic. Brian from Baltic took us out to dinner. showed us a good time. Thank you again, Brian, from Baltic. Go to Baltic, buy a bunch of stuff, pay off our dinner tab. That was really cool of him. But you said the next show, the spring show's in Birmingham, Alabama, right?
Greenbow, Alabama.
Greenbow. Never even heard of that.
Huh?
Forrest Gump.
Means nothing to me.
Movie? Forrest Gump. I think that your video's off a little bit because your lips are moving and I don't hear anything.
Greenbow, Alabama was the fictional town in Forrest Gump.
Oh, God. Mike, you're an idiot. So is it in Birmingham? Is that where? Yeah. All right. That actually sounds pretty interesting. I would love to see Birmingham. I bet Birmingham, Alabama is pretty cool. That'd be a cool show to check out. I don't know that I have anything else to say. You guys have anything else to say?
Whisper wants people to give, feedback on the show, obviously, but, Master Mondays was a new thing. They didn't have those before. So, looking for feedback on, people that did go, people that didn't go. If you did go, you liked it, you didn't like it. But that's, evaluates whether they do something like that again. To provide some information on that, apparently, I guess Miller doesn't want to hear what I'm talking about.
No. Scott Brown from RVIX is here.
Hey.
What's up, Scott?
I can't hear you because I got headphones on, but you guys can hear him.
yeah, for sure. Captain Pixel Factory. All right.
Pixel Factory.
Chatter's podcast. Oh, I came in the middle of podcast.
Sorry, crashing right in the middle.
What the Master Monday was that was different was that there was, I think, 3-hour sessions and 4-hour sessions as opposed to just like the 45 minutes to 1 hour type stuff. So you guys do like a really, deep dive into the topic, because most sessions and most conferences just kind of superficially go over something.
I went into the grounding one the first day, Monday, I guess. And had to leave after about an hour, but that was like super, super deep. The grounding one, like he went real, real deep into that.
Wicked.
Yeah, like
several feet under the ground, that deep.
Yeah.
For the grounding.
I mean, the guy was really down to earth too to talk to.
Okay. Yeah, that's enough. We're good. We're good there.
Very grounded guy.
I went to the BGP and IPv6 ones. There's supposed to be a lab, but the people that were going to the lab weren't the ones that ended up doing the show. So,
I would have done a BGP lab. That would have been dope.
My vision for it was that, it's not just a lab with a couple routers and you've got a routing table of six prefixes. I wanted to inject from multiple points into the lab, they have captures of routing tables from different points on the internet, and you can feed them into, exit BGP, go BGP, stuff like that to represent the entire global internet coming in these different points. Because I think it's a lot more impactful in a lab if you're doing, different communities to, filter things or prepends or changing how things worked to see how it affects on the whole internet, not just.
For sure. Let me do the next one and I'll pull in a feed from Houston and Brian. I'll pull in some real feeds. We'll tear it up. It'll be sweet. Miller's got to cut out here in a second. So let's wrap a bow on it really quick. Met a ton of vendors, so many vendors. It's all blurry. Some really good conversations. I think we're going to have some sponsored casts. I'm really looking forward to it. If you're a vendor and I talked to you or maybe didn't have an opportunity to talk to you, we're looking to do sponsored casts where you bringing yourself, an engineer, hopefully a reference customer. We want a reference customer in there, and yeah, we'll back and forth, have a little bit of discourse and see what we can see. I think it'd be a really good platform. Number two, we started a Patreon. Believe it or not, we have two patrons. Some of the levels are really...
Thanks, Mom.
Yay! We have one where one level you get access to our show notes, and there's a lot of weird things that go into those show notes, but there's a lot of information that we don't actually get to in the cast, but we still have that info in the show notes, right? So that's one. Another level is we have Slack. We use Slack like crazy. I mean, that thing's going bananas all the time. And when we started one just for patrons, so it's an additional channel that patrons exclusively get access to, and all the brothers are going to join there. They're not all there yet. Some people aren't going to be lazy and just click the link to join the thing.
It took Tom like a year to join Slack from Skype, so I don't know how long it'll take him to join a second Skype.
All he's got to do is click the link. Click the link that's in there. Another level we've got is like a $100 level, and that's going to be more for sponsors. We'll give you a shout out on a cast, that sort of thing. Thank you guys for listening. Miller, if people are going to grab a hold of you other than the Vis booth at Wispapalooza shows, how are they going to do that?
Facebook's probably the easiest way.
All right. And then Mikey, if people are going to grab you out in the real world, how are they going to do that?
Well, if they're in the real world, they're probably physically. But other than that, Facebook's probably the easiest place to find me.
Solid. All right. Facebook is definitely the Brothers with Facebook. That is Mike. He's the one jamming on there, keeping all the good content going. If you're going to catch me, Greg, it's at gregsoul.com. I got a contact form. You can hit me there. And if you're old school and you want to email us, it's contactus@thebrotherswisp.com. You can also hit us on Facebook, facebook.com/thebrotherswisp. I think that's probably it. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, everybody, who came up and said hi to us at the Wispa Show. Hopefully, you guys, these sounds are killing me. Hopefully, you guys will continue to do that. Please send us questions and comments. We really don't get much feedback. Tyler, if you're listening, thanks, brother. It was really cool meeting you. Thanks, everybody.
See you.
Bye.